Cryptozoology is a field that aims to prove the existence of mythical entities from folklore, usually rejected in the mainstream, but not totally ruled out either. Probably the most notable example is of an elusive, human-like hominid that is said to inhabit forests or mountains. In 1958, journalist Andrew Ganzoli of the Humboldt Times highlighted a fun, if dubious, letter from a reader about loggers in Northern California who discovered mysteriously large footprints. Quote, "Maybe we have a relative of the abominable snowman of the Himalayas," Ganzoli jokingly wrote in his September 21st column alongside the letter. His article received a lot of interest from the public, so Ganzoli and another journalist named Betty Allen published follow-up articles about the footprints, reporting the name loggers had given to the so-called creature who left the tracks, Bigfoot. So allegedly, that's where the name was born, but earlier accounts of the term may have been documented. Regardless, the most popular modern U.S. concept of Bigfoot can be traced directly to the Humboldt Times stories in 1958. But there are many other various myths concerning large, wild men from around the world. For example, in Western Canadian folklore, native stories about a large creature that lives in the forest was dubbed the Sasquatch. It was described as human-like and hairy, but has never been captured or officially recognized by the scientific community. Hundreds of alleged Sasquatch footprints have been documented, some measuring up to 24 inches in length, as well as some questionable video and photographs, but none that have been officially verified. A Soviet scientist, Boris Porchnev, suggested that Sasquatch and his Siberian counterpart, the Almas, could be a remnant of Neanderthals. But the fossil evidence suggests that Neanderthal was not a giant specimen, nor do I believe he had a hairy body like most primates. In Asia, we have stories of something called a Yeti, also known as the abominable snowman of the Himalayas. Said to be a large bipedal creature that leaves tracks in the snow, it is also said to dwell below the Himalayan snow line. Despite dozens of expeditions into the remote mountain regions of Russia, China, and Nepal, the existence of the Yeti remains unproven. In 1921, a journalist named Henry Newman interviewed a group of British explorers who had just returned from a Mount Everest expedition. The explorers told the journalist that they had discovered some very large footprints on the mountain, to which their guides had attributed to Mito Kangmi, essentially meaning man-bear snowman. The journalist got the snowman part right, but mistranslated Mito as filthy. Then he seemed to think abominable sounded even better and used this more menacing name in the paper, so that's where that name came from. The Yeti is said to be a muscular with reddish-brown hair and weighing over 200 pounds. It is described as relatively short compared to North American Bigfoot, averaging about 6 feet in height, but that's still taller than the average height of the locals. In the ancient legends and folklore of the Himalaya people, the Yeti should be avoided, like dangerous wild animals, and one should stay close and safe within the community. Alexander the Great demanded to see a Yeti when he conquered the Indus Valley in 326 BC, but according to National Geographic, local people told him that they were unable to present one because the creatures were so rare at low altitudes. In 2013, Oxford geneticist Brian Sykes put out a call to all Yeti believers and institutions around the world claiming to have a piece of Yeti hair, teeth, or tissue taken from a sighting. He received 57 samples, 36 of which were chosen for DNA testing, and compared with the genomes of other animals stored on a database of all published DNA sequences. Most of the samples turned out to be from well-known animals, such as cows, horses, and bears, with two of the samples coming from the jawbone of a Pleistocene polar bear that lived sometime between 40,000 and 120,000 years ago. The word Sasquatch is believed to come from a Salish word meaning wild man or hairy man. That said, since the primary evidence comes from the large footprints and legends, it seems highly probable that rather than belonging to a hominid creature that resembles a Wookiee from Star Wars, the Bigfoot legends may actually be based on larger than average people, which in some cases were historically referred to as giants, which were bearded rather than with bodies entirely covered with fur. If this is the case, one can expand the search to include many other myths and legends passed down by native tribal people from various lands. According to numerous written and oral legends of Native American tribes, a race of white giants has existed in the distant past, and in some cases, the tribes have maintained some empirical evidence. According to Paiute Indian oral legends, a tribe called the Sitika were a tribe of tall, red-haired giants that once occupied the area in the distant past. Amazingly, 9,400-year-old mummified remains were indeed found in a cave in Nevada, and while controversial private testing was published in this case, independent scientific study is not allowed on the remains for political reasons, and only a drawing of a photograph of the remains is permitted. Sarah Winnemecca Hopkins, a prominent female Native American activist, educator, and daughter of Paiute Chief Winnemecca, related many stories passed down in her tribe firsthand about the Sitika in her book Life Among the Paiutes, published in 1883. Quote, "My people say that the tribe we exterminated had reddish hair. I have some of their hair, which has been handed down from father to son. I have a dress which has been in our family a great many years, trimmed with the reddish hair. I'm going to wear it sometime when I lecture. It's called a mourning dress, and no one has such a dress but my family." Her book also tells of an alliance between the various tribes to help Paiutes in defeating a group of giants with red hair who had taken refuge in Lovelock Cave. A large fire was set at the entrance of the quarry to get them out, but the giants refused, so it was that many of them died of suffocation and others burned alive. In the early 20th century, archaeologists found thousands of artifacts and, as I said, skeletal remains inside the Lovelock Cave to show that it was not a mere myth and that the Paiutes told the truth.
For more than a century, a story has persisted about the skeletons of giants being found in Lovelock Cave in northern Nevada.
And for many years, human remains were put on display in museums here and elsewhere, but that changed. Most of the bones and skulls that were once considered to be historical artifacts have been returned to tribes for burial.
If oversized bones from the so-called Lovelock giants ever existed, they are no longer available to the public. But their story behind the legend still remains.
The I-Team's George Knapp has more.
Slicing through the bone-dry Humboldt Sink on a long dirt road, it's hard to imagine that all of this was once underwater. Remnants of a vast ancient lake can still be seen in the distance. For generations of first Americans, this was a lush paradise of tules, fish, and waterfowl. Humans have climbed this same narrow path up the jagged mountain for more than 4,000 years. That's how long indigenous peoples lived in and around the Lovelock Cave. The roof of the cave is still coated with soot from countless campfires. According to tribal lore, a race of red-headed giants made its last stand in this cave.
Among the Paiutes, would most of them say that the giants were real?
I've talked to say yes. I've never heard anybody say no.
Devoy Monk has spent all of her 80-plus years in Lovelock. Her family's home today houses a small museum, jam-packed with artifacts and depictions documenting centuries of Native culture and pioneer life. Monk has earned the trust of Paiute elders who say the stories are true, that the red-headed interlopers not only killed but ate their ancestors.
My Indian friends tell me they were cannibals, that they set traps, and we have a paper in the other room, that they dug holes in the pathways and where they walked and then covered them, and then the Indians would fall in, and they said the best part to eat were the thighs.
Famed Nevadan Sarah Winnemucca first wrote in her acclaimed book that the Paiutes waged a three-year war against a tribe of red-headed cannibals before trapping and then killing the last of them inside Lovelock Cave. Mainstream archaeologists have vigorously rejected the entire story, to the point that the State Museum in Winnemucca admonishes visitors at its front entrance that the red-headed giants are a myth. Bill Snodgrass, the curator of the Marzen House Museum in Lovelock, thinks there is reasonable basis for parts of the story. In the early 20th century, guano miners began excavating the Lovelock Cave and uncovered thousands of artifacts, along with mummified remains, including a few specimens much taller than the typical Paiute of centuries past. Later, scientific excavations found troves of native antiquities, along with bones. Some human remains were destroyed. Others were sent to museums for display. A few, Snodgrass says, were consumed in bizarre initiation rituals. He adds there is evidence, including basketry, of an unknown culture that lived near the cave. Records show some of them had red hair.
There was definitely a different people here.
Many, if not most, of the visitors who end up at the Marzen House Museum have questions about the red-headed cannibals. The locals still enjoy the debate.
Whether the red-headed giants ever existed, visits to the two museums are worth the drive up to Winnemucca and Lovelock. The Lovelock Cave is in Churchill County, off the beaten path, but not hard to find.
A mummy has been discovered, a mummy that may reveal the secrets of an even older society, one that dates back to the dawn of civilization.
This is extremely significant. This is unprecedented. We haven't had a find of this importance in my lifetime.
One thing that makes the mummy, known as the Spirit Caveman, so important are these fine hand-woven fabrics discovered at the burial site.
These textiles represent an extremely sophisticated ability to weave fabric by hand in a time where we didn't realize that people were doing that before.
The mummy was discovered tightly bound up in this matting. Out of respect for the dead, this photograph and this drawing are the only two pictures scientists will allow to be publicly displayed. Recent tests reveal that the mummy is 9,000 years old. That's three times older than any other mummy yet discovered in North America. That news has stunned archaeologists, because a mummy can tell scientists how people back then lived, what diseases they had, even what food they ate. Scientists can get that information by studying the mummy's DNA. That requires cutting a small piece of tissue from the body.
And it shouldn't be done.
And that, says Paiute Shoshone tribal leader Alvin Moyles, is desecrating the dead. The mummy was discovered near Paiute Shoshone land. Moyles believes the mummy's spiritual journey has been disturbed, and that the spirit cannot find peace until the body has been properly reburied.
You are bothering the spirit. They're not to be bothered. They're put to rest, and that's where they should be left.
But scientists claim that the mummy is so old that he couldn't possibly be related to the Paiute Shoshones, that the mummy's tribe was here thousands and thousands of years before anybody else.
They do not appear similar to any living Native American in North America. They have receding cheekbones, narrow face, long face. Some Indians have some of those traits, but as a group, those are Caucasoid traits. Those are Caucasoid traits. Those are Caucasoid traits.
The two sides are now caught in a catch-22. One way to prove kinship is through the DNA test, but the tribe doesn't want that because it would require further disturbance of the remains.
The DNA evidence would be definitive for ruling out certain groups. You can't necessarily prove with it which group it was, but you can rule out contending parties.
Until a decision can be made, the mysterious Spirit Cave mummy will remain trapped in limbo.
Yeah, he's kind of in the legal, spiritual, ethical limbo.
In Carson City, Nevada, Vince Sterla, Channel 3 reports.
Even mummies can't avoid the law and bureaucracy, it appears. Many archaeologists agree it's entirely possible the mummy is not related to any existing tribe in North America.
Yeah, it sounds like the mummy predated most of the Indian tribes from
sounds that
part
way.
Of the country.
There are many stories from many different Indian tribes like Hopi, Comanche, and others who speak of a mysterious race of giants with white skin and blonde or red hair who lived in the Americas thousands of years ago that mysteriously disappeared from the face of the planet, but in some cases leaving behind large bones and skulls, many which were dug up and documented in articles published in the 19th and early 20th century newspapers, only to be lost or forgotten in time. Some of these encounters were recorded by early European explorers, such as in South America. Patagonia is a region in southern Argentina and Chile, extending from the Andes to the Atlantic, and there are many accounts of a legendary race of extremely tall people that were first mentioned by Ferdinand Magellan and his crew, who claimed to have seen them while exploring the coastline of South America in the 1520s. Antonio Pigafetta, a crew member and chronicler of Magellan's expedition, wrote about their encounter, and I quote, "One day we suddenly saw a naked man of giant stature on the shore of the port, dancing, singing, and throwing dust on his head. The captain general sent out one of our men to the giant so that he might perform the same actions as a sign of peace. Having done that, the man led the giant to an islet where the captain general was waiting. When the giant was in the captain general's and our presence, he marveled greatly and made signs with one finger raised upward, believing that we had come from the sky. He was so tall that we reached only to his waist, and he was well proportioned." The captain named these people Patago in Portuguese and Patagon by his men in Spanish, traditionally said to be from pata, meaning foot. However, the gon suffix remains unexplained and was interpreted to mean land of the big feet. Many other accounts of giants in South America followed, and in 1579, Sir Francis Drake's ship chaplain, Francis Fletcher, wrote about encountering very tall Patagonian natives, saying that, and I quote, "Magellan was not altogether deceived in naming them giants, for they generally differ from the common sort of men, both in stature and strength of body, as also in the hideousness of their voice. But yet they are nothing so monstrous or giant-like as they were reported." He reduced the height of the Patagonians from 10 feet to 7.5 feet. In the 1590s, William Adams, an Englishman aboard a Dutch ship grounding Tierra del Fuego, reported a hostile encounter between his ship's crew and abnormally tall and powerful natives. In 1766, Captain John Byron had circumnavigated the world, and word had leaked that the crew had seen 10-foot-tall giants in South America, the official account of Byron's voyage appearing in 1773, and I quote, "When we came within a little distance from the shore, we saw, as near as I can guess, about 500 people, some on foot, but the greater part on horseback. One of them, who afterwards appeared to be a chief, came towards me. He was of a gigantic stature, and seemed to realize the tales of monsters in a human shape. If I may judge of his height by the proportion of his stature to my own, it could not be much less than 7 feet. Mr. Cummings, one of Byron's officers, came up with the tobacco as a gift, and I could not but smile at his astonishment, which I saw expressed in his countenance, upon perceiving himself, though 6 feet 2 inches high, become a pygmy among giants, for these people may indeed more properly be called giants than tall men, the shortest of whom were at least 4 inches taller." In his book, History of the Indians, Choctaw, Chickasaw, and Natchez, from 1899, Horacio Bardwell Cushman wrote, quote, "The tradition of Choctaw, a race of giants once lived in the state of Tennessee, and with which their ancestors had to fight when they arrived in Mississippi in their migration from the West. The tradition says that the individuals of the giant breed, known as Nuhulu, possessed an impressive stature." Cushman noted that over time, the term Nuhulu became common to refer to all white giants with which the Choctaws fought after crossing the Mississippi River. According to the story from 1857, the Comanche chief, Rolling Thunder, said, quote, "Many moons ago, a race of tall white men, 10 feet tall, and much more rich and powerful than any white person living now, who inhabited a large part of the country, stretching from dawn to dusk, their fortifications were crowning the tops of the mountains, protecting their cities located in the intermediate valleys. They exceeded all other nations in all kinds of trades. They were smart and brave individual warriors who ruled the land they had wrested from their former owners. The pale faces today would look like pygmies compared to the giants, both in their art and in their arms. In the opinion of the Comanche chief, the Great Spirit destroyed them when they forgot all about justice and mercy, becoming too proud. The Navajo is another ancient tribe that provides evidence of white giants they call the people of Starnak, describing them as a race of white giants, the largest mining technology that had built strongholds along the Americas that dominated the West, enslaving the smallest tribe. Eventually, the mysterious Starnak became extinct, or back in the heavens. In Aztec mythology, giants were the builders of the cities of Teotihuacan. The inhabitants reported that at the time of the Spanish conquest, they themselves had killed the last giants on earth. In the ancient city of Manta in Peru, they speak of a race of giants who, in the past, coexisted with them. Their legends say they came from the coast in large boats, as large ships, a group of men of a size such that its height was almost twice the size of a normal man. Their limbs were all in proportion, and it was monstrous to see their heads with hair that reached behind them. Their eyes were as big as small dishes. In folklore from all over Europe, giants were believed to have built the remains of previous civilizations. While beards were traditionally part of many ancient European civilizations, and by extension, the ancient Middle East, North Africa, and Eurasia, as they once shared the same ethnic demographic, they were certainly not wild ape men. And while they were described as hairy in early accounts by various tribes they encountered that often lacked facial hair themselves, they were usually then deified and responsible for the world's earliest examples of agriculture, megalithic stone monuments, architecture, clothing, metal, domesticated animals, and were absolutely seafaring. It seems logical then, given the evidence and lack thereof, that the hunt for the mythical Bigfoot should not be a search for a tall, primitive, simian creature, like an upright walking gorilla, but for the last possible remnants of a lost, forgotten race, highly intelligent, whose global civilization underwent major catastrophe, who were humbled by what appears to be a periodic cataclysm that afflicts the earth after long intervals, and from which we ourselves suffer a collective amnesia. It could be that the myth of Bigfoot may have a lot more in common with other ancient legends, such as the long-haired bearded gods of mythology, the titans of Atlantis, or even the giants of the Bible. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those who are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Please don't forget to hit the like button and don't forget to subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.